Wake up, everyone. It's time for a call to action. Welcome to Call to Action Today, where there are no sacred cows, with your host, Steve Noble, just an ordinary man who believes in an extraordinary God, and he's calling you out every week to live the Christian life in your home, your work, and even in politics. Call Steve now at 866-34-TRUTH, or check him out online at c2atoday.org. And now, with some much-needed cough medicine for the church, here's your host, Steve Noble.
Okay, I'm going to go a little old school here with you guys. I'm going to play a little old school game, and the old school game is called Name That Tune. So we're going to, I can't give it to you for long, but I'm going to see how good you guys are today on Call to Action Radio here on a beautiful Friday in North Carolina. I got a good friend in the studio who's been on the show before, but you'll meet him again here in a second. But here's the little game. Here's the Name That Tune. We'll see if you can figure this one out. Is that enough? That should be enough.
It's familiar.
Andy?
It's on the tip of my tongue.
It's there.
Yeah,
it's
I'm thinking.
Hold on. Just relax. It's coming.
I can only
I knew it's Casting Crowns.
Right. Casting Crowns, which is a great song, came out a couple of years ago, and we appreciate the Casting
Crowns. Sorry, Bart. Mercy Me.
Of course, that's Mercy Me, and I Can Only Imagine, which is now, isn't it the number one most successful contemporary Christian music song of all time.
Most popular song since Amazing Grace. So, yeah, it's that song has been it's the most downloaded song in the history of Christian music. It's just been it's been a phenomenon.
Yeah, it's mind-boggling. We all know that one. It crossed over onto the secular music side and just blew up. And of course, Mercy Me blew up along with it. And there's a story behind that song, and a really powerful story. A redemption story, a reconciliation story, a father and son story, a chasing your dream story, a not giving up story. There's a lot to it, and that's why this is a film that's coming out, The Irwin Brothers, another great film that they've God's given them this incredible talent to make these wonderful movies, and this one's opening on March 16th, and yes, that's 3/16, so praise the Lord for that little bump out there. That's pretty cool. But it's great, the first time you've been in the studio, you've been on the show several times,
Finally made it into the inner sanctum here.
Yes.
So I don't know if that actually makes me a sacred cow or... I'm not a sacred cow.
We say no sacred cows.
No sacred cows. So
you don't want to.
I didn't know if you actually made it into the room if you became a sacred cow, but...
Depends on the guest. Some sacred cows are guests that
the sacred
go down
cows
in flames.
Keep trying to get in. But
yes,
no,
that's exactly so, right. Yes. Anyway, it's great to have you here. And gosh, you guys have done so many interviews and so many things over the years. But the first time I found out about you guys was with October Baby. And I don't even know how that came up. So one day I pre-recorded with you.
Right.
I pre-recorded with John. And then the two leading ladies in the movie, I pre-recorded with them. And then October Baby, of course, was such a powerful pro-life movie, an incredible story. And then when Mom's Night Out came out, I met you on a cruise ship.
Yep.
That was a marriage cruise. That was a Family Life Today.
It was.
Gina, my wife, was with me, and you screened it. And it was an early screening. And Mom's Night Out, which was just hilarious. And then, of course, we started to get to know each other better, and John, and then Woodlawn, and I was really involved in it's been a great joy and a blessing for me personally, Andy, to get to know you guys and to do whatever I can to help these movies. But this story goes back a while for you guys.
Yeah.
With an unlikely start an illegal start, I think.
Yeah, it was. We, I think the reason why we became friends is we're both movie nuts, and we'll, talk movies till, 2 in the morning, and it's a very unhealthy obsession.
Especially one particular strain of movies.
Yeah, not represented by any coffee mugs on this table. But
exactly.
So
I'm holding that up for Facebook Live. There's Star Wars coffee mugs everywhere.
You owe Disney money now. So, but yeah, we were in the middle of promoting Mom's Night Out, and I would do these artist screenings where I would invite one music artist to come see the film because we wanted to help them get them to help promote it. And in order to kind of manipulate everybody to get there, I would say that and tell everybody else that artist was hosting the screening for us. So there's still there was a screening of Mom's Night Out that was hosted by Michael W. Smith that Smitty to this day doesn't know that he hosted for us. and so I reached out to Bart on Facebook and just said, hey, we've never hung out before, but would you want to come see my movie tonight?
Bart Millard of Mercy Me.
So Bart Millard of Mercy Me, the lead singer for Mercy Me that wrote I Can Only Imagine. And so that night he showed up and we started talking after the movie was over. He fell in love with Mom's Night Out and he said, I don't know if you know this, but they've been developing my life story at the studio for the past 5 years. I would love for you guys to consider directing.
Wow.
And I said, I don't know if you know this, but they sent us the script this morning.
Wow. Amazing.
And so it was a match made in heaven. And then we went on to that night to go watch Captain America together at the midnight screening, and it solidified our friendship.
Yes.
So, but as we were trying to find out the rest of the story, we found out just the details about the story that were just too good to be true.
Yeah.
And I was like, how has this story not been told? So everybody loves the story of the song. The song, they always equate it with their own personal story. And so everybody has an I Can Only Imagine story. But it's a simple song that's just had a powerful impact on culture.
Yeah, amazing.
So the idea of where does that power come from? And when you hear the rest of the story about Bart and his dad, it fills in all the blanks. It's pretty
Amazing. And that's the, you know, and Amy Grant's a part of this story, and there's a line in the movie, and I imagine it's probably part of what happened when he was like, you know, I wrote this in about 10 minutes. You know, he's on a bus. It's the middle of the night. They're on that big, that converted school bus for a tour bus. And he had been in his journal over a period of time, and this is a true story. Bart had been, the word imagine just kept showing up.
Yep.
God just woke him up. I think he was married by that time, wasn't he?
Yeah, he was. You know, but when we started when we took over the script, you know, we sat down with Bart and we said, you know, doing a movie of your life is not doing a portrait. You know, I mean, doing a photograph is doing a portrait. So a photograph would be like a documentary. But I've got to make you feel in a 2-hour window. The audience feel everything that you felt over a lifetime. So we want to take all the events that completely happened, especially the stuff with Amy Grant and the stuff with his father, all those things happened. We've just got to sequence it right to fit it all into a compressed 2 hours.
Yeah.
So even the most hard to believe things in the story actually happened. So
because that was what led to the whole use of the story when Amy Grant was like, "Hey, you didn't write this song in 10 minutes. It took you your whole life."
So
to write
you know, and that was the part that really, you know, what made us sign on to do the movie. So we were out promoting Woodlawn. We had been talking about doing Imagine for a while, and was doing a radio show, Joy FM, down in Tampa, to promote Woodlawn. And off the air, the host asked me, "What are the stories you're looking at?" I said, "Well, we're looking at Bart Millard's story and the story of the song, I Can Only Imagine." And he said, "Oh my goodness, I was at the Ryman that night when Amy Grant pulled him up on stage and gave him his song back."
Man.
And I was like, "What?" So I called Bart. I'm like, "Did this happen?" He's like, "Oh yeah, that was the first night that my real life was exceeded by my imagination." And I was like, "How's this not in the script?"
Yeah, how's that not in the script? Yeah, well, it's in the script now. You're going to find that out on March 16th when I Can Only Imagine opens nationwide. We're here with Andy Irwin. Of course, Andy and John Irwin, the Irwin brothers, who have been the force that God has used behind all these awesome movies. We'll talk more about that, how they get into the filmmaking business, and what's it like to be in the filmmaking business. We'll go down all those roads when we come back. Welcome back. It's Steve Noble, Call to Action Radio. We shouldn't be listening to that David Bowie stuff. We should continue to play Mercy Me, I Can Only Imagine, which is a song that we all know. Yes, Andy Irwin wanted to chime in.
I like David Bowie.
You should like
David
Bowie.
Yeah, David Bowie's awesome.
Because you have good taste, dude.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
And the Star Wars Cup, the whole nine yards. So you're good. We're bonding. That's beautiful. But we're talking to Andy Irwin. He's Andy and John Irwin, the Irwin brothers, of course. Working, let's go back and work forward. So the first October Baby, and then Mom's Night Out, and then Woodlawn, and then Steve McQueen, American Icon, which they did with Greg Laurie last fall. And then, of course, I Can Only Imagine, which is the true story behind the song, which is a really, really powerful story. And we're going to keep unpacking that and what it was like to work with Dennis Quaid. And I was, thanks. You guys were kind enough to let me come up there at Oklahoma City when you were filming the second time and to be around that, which was really fascinating to kind of see all that happen. And it helps me to communicate more effectively on the air to kind of bring people into the story. But I want to back up before we talk more about I Can Only Imagine, which is opening on March 16th. It's coming up in just a couple of months nationwide. So, and we're going to do a special screening for pastors and some other folks, some of you Sacred Cow Killers out there, which are monthly supporters of the show. We're going to invite you into that as well coming up in early February. But this is an incredible movie. I've seen it several times now. And I think, especially from a story standpoint, just remarkable how powerful the story is behind the song that was already powerful in and of itself. But let's go back in time even way before that. How did you guys even get started in this world? I love this story.
Bad luck. you know, I tease people all the time because, you know, kids come up and they want to, you know, get their start in the industry. And we're all about helping and empower the next generation. But, you know, anytime somebody asks about, you know, hey, you want to be in filmmaking, I'll be like, is there anything else you want to do with your life? And if they say, yeah, I could do this or this or that, like, do that. But if it's an obsession, you can't get away from it, yeah, and it's just something you have to do, then chase it with everything in your being. And so, you know, John and I, we grew up in, you know, Birmingham, Alabama. My father was in television and radio, and so we kind of grew up as studio rats. And we would work for $10 a day for this local cable access station. And in return, we got to use the equipment from midnight till 4 a.m. every night. And so we were homeschooled and had opportunity to have flexible work hours.
Oh, that's right. You guys were homeschooled, exactly. Which explains a lot.
It explains a lot, yes. Yeah, we are recovering homeschoolers. But we I have great love for homeschooling. That gave me my start. But,
all four noble kids,
yes,
homeschooled.
Nice. Through and nice. Through. And yeah, they hopefully they aspire to be like their father. But the so we you know, we loved being around it. It was a hobby. And then one day I had gone off to college, and one day ESPN came to town to do an Alabama football game, and the cameraman got sick, and somebody that was a friend of ours said, hey, called John and said, hey, lie about your age. Just don't say anything about how old you are and say that you've done this before and you can be on this crew. And so John shows up as this 15-year-old kid, and you know, I'm sure that we'd get a lot of trouble for it now, and shows up and does this game and has the time of his life.
Yeah, I bet.
So the next week they call back and they said, hey, or, you know, we're calling for sports freelancers, and are you a sports freelancer? And John's like, I don't know what that is, but I didn't want to tell them that. So he's like, absolutely, that's what I am. And so that led to this career in sports television. I got the call from John that he was doing that, and I said, well, that's way cooler than what I'm doing. So I came home from school, and we started a business in our home as a film business together. And John had converted my bedroom at home into our office, so I had to stay out behind the house in a trailer because John had kicked me out of the house. And so that's where it started, and we kind of got into, you know, doing music videos, documentaries, that type thing. Won music video of the year several years in a row. And then John was working on the set.
What genre of music videos were you doing?
Everything across the board. You know, we won several videos for Casting Crowns, for Michael Louis Smith, Amy Grant. And then we kind of found our niche with rock videos.
Did you guys do Skillet?
Yeah, we did Skillet.
That's
we did, we did Monster, which has 200 million views on YouTube
wow.
now. We did two. We had two of their videos, and we did Red, we did Switchfoot, we did a lot. So so we did that for years, got good at, you know, making things blow up and look pretty on camera. And so, which led to us doing stunt sequences in other people's movies as second unit directors. So
wow,
John,
I didn't know that.
John was working on the movie Courageous for the Kendrick brothers that have done Fireproof and War Room.
Yeah, oh yeah.
And on Courageous, John was doing all the stunt stuff, well, a lot of the stunt stuff with the police car chases and stuff. And Alex Kendrick pulls John aside at one point and says, John, what's your purpose? And John didn't know how to answer that question. Said, "Well, I'm here to get a paycheck, you know, Alex, and I'm just here to, you know, kind of work for you." And he said, "It's time for you and your brother to figure out what God's wanting you to tell, what stories wow. you want to tell." He said, "Don't try to be us; go be you." And they really kind of launched us. And
that's amazing.
John came home with a script that he had worked on and made called October Baby, based about a girl that finds out about her birth mom and her story that is a very pro-life message and story of forgiveness, and I read it and fell in love with it, and we were off to the races.
Is that when you met Kevin Downs?
Yeah, so John...
Who's the bad cop?
He's the bad cop.
Courageous.
So Kevin Downs, he's a longtime actor, but a lot of people don't know that he's has a longer list of stuff he's produced as a movie producer. And so John and him were doing the stunt sequences, and John kept bruising him up by having him jumped over fences and jump out of police cars. And it's a wonder he still talks to John to this day. And he was looking for a new, you know, director to work with, and we were looking for somebody to solve our problems for us. And so producers solve problems, directors cause problems.
Excellent.
It was a match made in heaven.
Beautiful.
So we've done three movies together now, and it's been a great working relationship. And I can only imagine to this date has been our favorite thing we've ever worked on.
Yeah, I was going to ask you that, and we'll unpack some more of that. We're talking to Andy Irwin, Andy and his brother John, Irwin Brothers, and I Can Only Imagine, which is the true story behind the song. This is the movie that's coming out nationwide on March 16th, which I assume that's a Friday, right?
Yes, it's Friday, Saturday, Sunday. So the 16th is a Friday. And
how important... For any movie, but especially for Christian movies in this world that we're in now, which is very interesting. We'll talk a little bit about Christian media and Christian film before the show's over. But that opening weekend, how important is
that? It's critical. It's critical, especially for a film like ours, is you're fighting for theater space. So we're we're coming out against, you know, some really big movies like, you know, Ready Player One and Wrinkle in Time and some other movies like that. And so, you know, but you see movies that do it well where they have an incredible opening weekend. This movie that came out this fall with Lionsgate, Wonder, that's an incredible story. And Christians came out en masse to see that story. It was a very family-friendly movie. Because of their opening weekend, it's gone on to do $130 million in the box office and really had a great impact. But it's because they made such a statement that opening weekend that they've held on to theaters against Star Wars. So it really, for a smaller film like that, it really gives us a chance to what they call counter-programming and really have our seat at the table and not see the big films kind of come in and sweep up the screens.
And that's the name of the game. And even for Hollywood, regardless of whether you're putting out Christian content or not, it's all about the Benjamins. And if the Benjamins are there that weekend, why wouldn't they ride that train?
They'll let you say anything you want as long as you make the money. If you make the money, you can put your message in it as a Christian. It's a prime opportunity for the gospel.
Yeah, it's really awesome. We'll talk about that too, because Andy and John, the Irwin brothers, just have an awesome vision for how we can use film. This is kind of the number one platform on the planet right now to take the gospel, to embed it in stories. And for these guys, we're going to talk about the role of true stories versus fictional stories. There's a lot to unpack as we move through the show today, and more that we'll talk about. With I can only imagine what Dennis Quaid, what's it like to pull him into a set? This is a big name, you know, kind of an A-lister kind of actor. And it was pretty intense to watch him. The guy's a pro.
It's one of his best roles to date.
Oh, it's just unbelievable. So I want to get his reaction to working on a film like this, kind of the hopes and plans and dreams, Christian media, using media for the gospel, all of that when we come back with Andy Irwin. This is Steve Noble. It is Call to Action Radio. We'll be right back after this break. March 16th. Put it on your calendar and put it on your iPhone. We'll be right back.
What would make a man so bold? Make a woman lay her own life down. Only one thing, Jesus Christ.
Welcome back. It's Steve Noble, Call to Action Radio. The name of the movie is the same name as the song that we all know, I Can Only Imagine, which just became, it's the number one selling contemporary Christian movie of all time. Supplanting, the only thing that's above it is Amazing Grace, right?
Yeah, it's had quite a run.
Triple platinum, just amazing. And as amazing as the song is, you know, I think when we all heard it for the first time, you know, obviously it grabbed everybody. And you're like, wow, this is amazing. And then you throw yourself into it and it speaks to different people in different ways. But we were, I mean, I was clueless about the story behind the song. But once you know the story and you find that out when you see the movie, I Can Only Imagine, which is opening nationwide on March 16th, then all of a sudden, just like it dawned on Amy Grant, okay, I get the song now because now I finally get the story.
Yeah.
And that's really the whole point, I think, behind it from my perspective.
Yeah, it's wrapped up in who Bart is as a you know, character and, you know, we in the relationship with his father. And so you know, Bart, when we did this, like I said, we wanted to do an accurate portrait of him. So we said, we got to let us know what's under the hood and what you actually felt. So it's a very candid look where Bart let us kind of see, you know, struggles, flaws, all of that, to kind of see what he went through. And even what he went through, even his wife, who he's dated since seventh grade, Shannon, didn't know the full story of the abusive relationship with his father until they had been married for, you know, quite a while.
Wow.
So
yeah, and by the way, we're talking to Andy Irwin, Andy and his brother John Irwin brothers. Imagine, of course, coming out in March, and then Woodlawn and Mom's Night Out and October Baby and the Steve McQueen movie. So Andy's in town for a screening tonight, and where is John? Do we even know?
I don't even know.
We like Batman, you know, Batman and Robin.
At this point, if we, you know, never show we up kind in the of same place. Just passing the night. I don't really know where he is, but I assume he's out there doing something important. We actually got a chance to screen the movie on Wednesday night for the vice president
this
and members
is so
of
cool.
Congress. So
at the Museum of the Bible, where I'll be next Wednesday.
It was pretty awesome. So, you know, we
is Trump going to see it?
The vice president said that he really wanted us to come back and show it at the White House in March. So I don't know. Wow. I don't know how those things work.
What'd you think of the vice president?
I like him. He's a really good leader. I'm not extremely political. I'm a storyteller, so I kind of focus on stories. But
good for you.
Being in the room with him, he really grabbed my attention and feels like a man of integrity.
Yeah.
So
awesome.
So anyway, he watched it at the end of the movie, came up personally shook. We spent a little bit of time with him before we showed the film, and then after the movie, he came up, made a beeline for Bart, and they shook hands. And Ms. Pence came up; she had tears in her eyes, And they just said what a powerful story it was. So it was really cool. But I think what it connects with is it's a father-son story.
Yeah.
And so basically, for those that don't know the backstory to it, Bart's describes his father growing up as a monster, as he was he had a severe brain injury from a construction site accident when Bart was first born. And as a result, he couldn't filter his anger, and he would have these fits of rage and took it out on his family and ultimately took it out specifically on Bart. And Bart had to endure that up until high school, and his dad found out that he had terminal pancreatic cancer. And Bart had to take care of him every night for 2 years. And as his dad was passing away from cancer, he said he watched his dad go from being a monster to being his best friend, the man he always hoped he would be, as he understood the grace of Christ. And so it's a really powerful story. Dennis plays the dad. So
was it, you know, you were mentioning earlier when we come back from the break, because this, I've interviewed Bart a couple times, and I'll play those interviews on the show here, sure, in the next couple months. But it was interesting to talk to him about what's that like to all of a sudden, you know, kind of open up the hood,
yep,
of your life, and all these people start peering in. But yep, I mean, he did mention that he talks about it when they're touring. But what was that process like from a filmmaking side?
You know, with Bart, Bart's since become one of my dearest friends. And, you know, I've worked around the music industry for a long time, and he can, you know, the people that you meet that are authentic, you know, just like any other business, you know, sometimes it's just the, you know, it's a projected image of what they want to be. Yeah. And then there's other people that are the real deal.
He's totally the real deal. I had a great conversation with him in Nashville, yeah, when you screened the movie, yeah, for the first time. And then I ran into him at the Dallas airport. Yeah. With some Harvest stuff. It was like 11:55 at night at, yeah, the baggage claim. Yep. And I'm sitting there talking to him, and this lady says something. She's like, "Oh, you look familiar to me." And it wasn't me. It was her, it was Bart. She, "What do you do?" And he goes, "Oh, I'm in the music,
yeah,
business."
I sing stuff.
And she's like, "Oh, really? Like how?" "Oh, I'm in a band." "Oh, really? What band?" "It's Mercy Me." "Oh my," you know,
yeah.
But he was like, he's just, yeah, the real, he's a normal,
yeah, he's
guy.
A normal guy. And Bart, you know, as we started telling the story, he had just started kind of dealing with his story and sharing it from stage and that type of thing. And that, you know, as he's really understood grace and understood sharing kind of the pain of his past, you know, it's led to him writing songs like Flawless and Dear Younger Me and what, yeah, you know, what would he go back and tell his 8-year-old self? And the reason is because of the story. That's how he kind of worked it out. And so as we got into it and kind of started working through how to the perspective to tell the story, he was very involved every step of the way because we wanted to figure out what makes him tick. And so he was on set by the monitor. And whenever he was on set, you know, he was able to kind of help us filter through it. And a couple of times, there was a couple of scenes where it wrecked him because he, wow, saw it acted out. And he was like, "That's what happened." And then there was one scene where his dad, there's a violent reaction where he smashes a plate over Bart's head and Bart runs out of the room. And Bart said, "It's the first time I watched and was able to kind of imagine the shame that my dad felt when I left the room."
Wow.
And he said it really wrecked, wow, me. It gave me a lot of compassion for my father.
That's amazing.
So it's a great story of forgiveness, and Dennis Quaid absolutely kills it.
So what was that like? Dennis Quaid, obviously a movie veteran, a great actor. And I'll mention this because my wife and I saw the movie recently, and she's not a big Dennis Quaid,
sure,
fan,
sure,
but she said, not because she doesn't like him, it's just because she hasn't seen a lot of his stuff, but she said I didn't even recognize it as Dennis Quaid. Yeah. He was completely gone in that character.
Yeah, it was amazing. He really just went with it. And he, you know, when we first got on set, you kind of go through that first day. It's kind of like being on a first date with somebody where you're just like trying to figure out what makes this person tick. And so you figure out your working relationship, and he got to the end of the day and he said, "Do you have any notes?" I said, "Well, could you give me a little bit less?" And he said, and I didn't know if I was going to step on his toes by saying that.
Right.
And he said, "Thanks for that." He said, "I really like people to rein me in because I like to push the boundary,
yeah,
and I like to be reined in." And I said, "Well, I feel like this character, the most powerful emotion is suppressed emotion. So the more you bottle it up, like a shook up bottle of soda pop,
yeah,
the more this is going to be powerful." And he went there and really internalized it.
Yeah.
And so as a result, we were doing the breakfast scene with him and Bart, where Bart comes back home. And he just took it to another gear where I've never been with an actor in a room where it took it to that level.
You could have heard a pin drop.
Oh, my goodness.
I was sitting in that little side room watching.
I just was sitting there and I was like,
it's mesmerizing.
I was like, it brought out greatness in John Michael that played Bart, John, yeah, Michael Finley. And he gave a great performance. And we're sitting there in the room and I'm just eating popcorn watching the movie. And that's where you see an actor really kind of give it. So I told him afterwards, I said, you're killing it in this role. And he said, I love this character. He said, nobody's ever let me play a guy that goes through this level of redemption before. And he said, I love this character. And so I think it's something special for Dennis Quaid fans that it's something you haven't seen from him in a role before.
How would you classify it in terms of a personal experience for Dennis Quaid? I don't know anything about the guy's faith background
Dennis was raised in Houston, Texas, raised in a Baptist church. So he's familiar with the tent poles of Christianity. I've never really talked to him about where his personal beliefs are. I know he's friendly to Christianity. But it was really cool. When I went to go show the first cut of the film to Bart out in San Diego, and they were on tour. And Bart, just when he gets excited about something, he just can't help talking about it, tells the world. So he texts Dennis and said, I've just seen Imagine, the first cut. It's incredible. And Dennis was like, well, when do I get to see it? I was like, Bart, I'm not ready to show it to him yet. And he's like, I want you to drive up to my house and show it to me tonight. So I drove from San Diego up to L.A.
Oh, man.
And I went to his house.
No pressure.
No pressure. So I go to his house, and we're sitting there, and he's like, oh, I forgot. I only have a Blu-ray player in the bedroom. He's like, I hope this isn't awkward. And I'm like, well, fine, Dennis, whatever. So bedroom was gigantic. So I'm sitting in the seating area up front, and he and his 9-year-old twins, he's got a boy and a girl, his twins are sitting in the back with him. And the movie got done, and I turned around to say, what'd you think? And he was just ugly crying. Just crocodile tears.
Wow.
And he's wiping it. He gave me a big hug. He's like, that was powerful. He called Bart that night. They talked for four or five hours.
Really?
Night. And he said, Bart, when Andy left, he said, my kids started asking me about God and heaven. Mm. And he said, questions I don't really have the answer to. I've never had a conversation like that with him. And he said, this movie is about God, how God does his miracles the hard way sometimes. And he said, I'm in. He said, whatever you guys need, I love this movie.
Wow.
So I know that he's proud of the work, and I don't think you can help engaging with material like this and not affect you in some way.
No, exactly right. And that's why when we watched it just recently, and I was like, there's so many different levels here.
Yeah.
There's forgiveness and bitterness. There's fathers and sons. There's chasing your dreams and believing in the way God has created you, that there's something special there in all of us. So whether it's making movies or acting in movies or doing music or being a mom or being a dad or being a small business owner, whatever it is. And it really touches on so many different levels. And I think that's what happened with the song.
Exactly.
It was kind of this Holy Spirit thing, like with the Left Behind books. Yeah. My favorite thing in the Left Behind books was the last book.
Yep.
When Jesus comes back and one of the guys is elbowing and his friend going, hey, dude, he's like using my first name. He's talking right to me. And the other guy's standing and going, no, he isn't. He's talking to me.
Yep.
No, he's talking to everybody individually all at the same time. And I can only imagine not just the song, but the movie. I fully expect to do the exact same thing. We'll wrap it up when we come back after this. Welcome back. It's Steve Noble, Call to Action Radio, talking to my friend Andy Irwin. Today is brother John, the other half of Batman and Robin. We don't know where he is, but hopefully he's doing something productive. These guys travel like you're paid to. I mean, it's just crazy the schedule you guys have and everything going on. But God has blessed it, and I can only imagine, which is the true story behind the song, coming out on March 16th nationwide. And as a reminder, we talked about this before, and every time I talk about, especially Christian films, which are the ones that I get behind and for obvious reasons, but that opening weekend is everything. So when you're like, oh, I really want to see it, well, you got to put your money in your time where your mouth is. And remember, this isn't just about your entertainment. It's definitely not about John and Andy Irwin's back pocket or Kevin Downs or anybody else. This is about using the probably the number one medium on the planet that goes beyond the walls. It gets behind the iron curtain, if you will. And big movies, when they're successful, they go all over the world. And when you impregnate them with the gospel and with God's truth and with these beautiful stories like the Irwin brothers have been doing, it's a great vehicle to take the gospel into places that normally wouldn't see it and to people that normally wouldn't go to church. And those people in America, they're not going to church. That's kind of the nuns. But they're going to movies. They're buying the majority of the tickets. So this is really, that's what I love about what you guys do and why I've been so interested in it for years. I love clandestine activity.
Uh-huh.
And that's really what this is.
Yeah, it's absolutely. It's
a Trojan horse.
Yeah, it's a double bottom line. You know, first of all, in order for us to be able to continue to have a seat at the table longer than, you know, a film or two, you have to entertain people.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I'm as passionate about the form of filmmaking as I am about my Christianity. They're both very important to me. I want to make something that's worth somebody spending $10 to go see.
Yeah.
And so I think, you know, with Imagine, I hope that that continues to raise the bar. I think we all are kind of, there's a group of us, not just me and John, but the Kendricks and John Gunn that did Case for Christ and Devon Franklin that did Miracles from Heaven. There's a small, very intimate group of us that are all pushing each other more and more towards quality and saying, let's get this better and better and better, more and more entertaining. So I think you see the bar beginning to rise. But then the double bottom line, the second part is a way to earn the right to be heard, just like so many other groups in Hollywood do, is being able to subversively put your worldview in it.
Sure.
And so we put the gospel front and center. And that's why we choose True Stories, because it gives us that opportunity as a softball pitch.
Yeah, so I wanted to talk about that, the use of True Stories. So we're in the last segment. We'll run out of time, but we got about 10 minutes. So yeah. True Stories, J. Michael Finley.
Yep.
And then kind of what's up? What's next for you guys? But let's talk about the use of True Stories, because Woodlawn was true, and this is obviously true. You did the documentary about Steve McQueen with Greg Laurie. Why? And you guys have made, I think, a conscious decision to stay on this road. These True Stories.
Yeah, I think we found, you know, same like with a singer where they finally find their song.
Yeah.
And it's like, that's our song to sing. And so with Woodlawn, we just stumbled into the idea of a true story. And we found that you can be much more bold with the gospel in a true story and it not feel cliche or preaching at you, because you're telling somebody's real life experience. And so without it, you rob the experience of what really, really happened. And so, you know, as Christians, we look for showing the gospel in action. And so we look for these great stories of redemption where it's just naturally in it. And then we just tell it for that experience. So I don't have to make you believe that the, you know, fictitious story of this abusive father coming to reconciliation with his son's possible with the gospel, because it happened.
Yeah.
And so with Bart's story and how that led to how he reconciled that was imagining what his dad was seeing in heaven as a redeemed person.
Yeah.
Led to something that everybody's experienced the power of that song. Nobody can deny the power of that song.
So, yeah, and it blew outside of the Christian world and went secular and
so,
pop and
country. As a storyteller, the biggest question you ask is why.
Yeah.
And so you go and you begin to answer those questions, and then the gospel just comes front and center. So,
what about J. Michael Finley? He plays Bart Millard and incredible singer.
So John Michael is an incredible singer. He was a Broadway actor. He still is a Broadway actor. He was in Les Mis, was the understudy for Jean Valjean. And so we did an open casting call across the whole country, five or six different cities. And he submitted from New York, had never been in a film. He was a kid from Arkansas, then moved to Missouri. His dad is an associate pastor at a Baptist church to this day. And so he grew up going to camps, hearing Mercy Me Sing. And he just is like he's like part Seth Rogen, part Kevin James. He's just got this quality that just jumps off the screen, and you love him, and which is part of what attracted Lionsgate to distributing the film, is they love John Michael. So we discovered him. I called Bart, and the way I get Bart to have business meetings is I schedule it around something fun. So I'm always like, hey, you want to go to the movies tonight? Yeah, I'll go to the movies. Hey, let's have dinner beforehand. We'll talk a little business. So that's – I just told my strategy. So, Bart, I hope you're not listening. And he was like, Andy, I got to tell you that I look forward to our business meetings. So when I heard about John Michael, I said, okay, I've got an investor that's got a private jet. And how would you like to go up to New York tonight? We'll listen to J. Michael on the plate, and then we'll fly home. And I was like, the investor's going to cover it all. And he's like, yeah. So we got on the plate.
Yeah,
we're on the private jet. And it was me, Bart, and his wife Shannon, and a couple others. We're flying up there.
Next time, do some live radio.
Yeah. And I look over, and Bart's got this glazed-over smile on his face. And I'm like, Bart, just for the record, these business meetings may have gotten to a level that I cannot sustain anymore.
This is the pinnacle.
From here, it's downhill.
So you want to have dinner? Bro, where are we flying?
Yeah, exactly. So we heard him that night in Les Mis. It was during singing the song Bring Him Home. I turned to Bart. It's like, is this the guy? He's like, this is the guy. So he just, just to see a kid that's never been in a film, just to understand the discipline of film, and each scene he got better and better and better to where he stole most of the scenes he was in. So we have a habit of casting the lead as kind of an unknown, like Rachel Hendricks in October Baby, Caleb Castile in Woodlawn, and now John Michael Finley in Imagine, and we like to surround him with names. But John Michael is the kid's a star. And I think that the audience is going to just fall in love with
him. How did he handle First time on film.
The biggest,
and he's across the table from Dennis.
Okay, so we're doing the breakfast scene, right? With that I was talking about, where Dennis just brought his A game, and Dennis is just absolutely just. I haven't seen anything like that in any of my films before, and I'm just sitting there just in awe. So I knew that we're going to have great and good. And we turned to John Michael, and we were talking, and I said, "Bro, trust your instincts, man. You're a really good actor. Don't worry about trying what you're going to do. Just pay attention to what Dennis is doing and respond. Just react. I mean, it's good acting. It's reacting." And we turned the camera on him, and then all of a sudden you saw this kid kick it to another level,
yeah.
And he matched Dennis, and it was like, oh, my goodness, we've got great and great in this scene.
Yeah.
And it's like kind of when you watch American Idol and you see a singer that's kind of raw and they're learning, and then all of a sudden they hit this note that they didn't know they could hit, and the confidence goes on, and all of a sudden you've got a superstar like a Kelly Clarkson.
Yeah.
It's like one of those moments where I'm just sitting there like, kid's a star. He's a star.
And everybody knew it at the time. Like I said,
moment in Star Wars where Rey first got the lightsaber and the light goes on in her eyes. She's like, holy cow, I'm a Jedi.
Yeah, this is for me. It
was that moment.
This is who I am. Yeah, that was watching all that happen. And I was wondering how he was going to handle it because, you know, he's a newbie.
Oh, yeah.
And then there's Dennis Quaid.
Yep.
And then you could just kind of see it all come together.
That was cool.
And then, like you just said before, that's what I actually said to somebody later. I was like, I was watching Andy watching a movie.
Because
I was behind your shoulder, and I was watching the monitor.
My job gets really easy when that happens.
You're just watching the monitor.
I'm just sitting there going, like, can we do that again? I don't know anything different. I just like this movie. Let's go. So, yeah.
That was so cool.
It was special, man.
So, are you allowed to talk about what you're thinking about doing next?
I can allude to it. I don't know what I'm going to get in trouble for. I didn't clear this with anybody.
Sacred cows, bro.
One of the stories we're really interested in telling, and that we're still delving into what angle it's going to be, so I can't really kind of tell the details. But we fell in love with the Jesus movement when we did Woodlawn.
Yeah.
And so we're working with filmmaker Brent McCorkle, and he co-wrote Imagine with John, and he's already working on the script for it. But we're looking at doing a kind of a telling the story of the beginning of the Jesus movement out in California with Calvary Chapel and all that the whole angle. Greg Laurie, a lot of those things. And,
never heard of him.
Jesus Revolution. It's going to be an incredible movie. So hopefully we'll be filming that later this year. And I probably have said more than I'm supposed to, but as we've uncovered details of the story, it's
all right. I work for those guys, so you can blame me.
It's special, man. It's special.
That's so cool.
Hey, Greg, if I told that too soon, it's his fault.
It's my fault, and I'll see him in a couple weeks in Dallas.
Cool.
So maybe it'll come raining down there while I'm there. Anything else?
We've always got three or four, and there's other filmmakers we're starting to collaborate with that, you know, we'll have the DNA of these Irwin Brothers films as we kind of have followed the Pixar model of there's this creative brain trust that there's a bunch of us that are filmmakers that want to make great quality work,
yeah.
And we're chasing it. It's not something we ever catch. We just want to get better and better and better. And so, there's going to be a rotation of people as we continue to do that. And so we've got a couple other stories we've got our eye on, and so hopefully we'll start being able to really kind of get this thing moving even quicker to where we can have great products coming out. But a big part of that is the size of how Imagine does will give opportunities for future films.
Yeah, it just gives you more mojo to walk
it
into.
It does.
The future.
You hit film, it opens up a lot of doors.
How do you guys, and we got about a minute and a half, how are you guys handling what God has done in your life?
Well, I think God has really kind of brought us to a place where we're really humbled us to the place where we're about stewardship. You know, I'm not my movies. It's about what God wants to do. So every day I step on set, I just say, Lord, what does this film need to be? And so Stephen Kendrick was very encouraging to me from, you know, War Room, just saying, Andy, what you tasted when you cast Caleb Castile and God said, this is my guy. He said, that's what you want to taste every day. So every day I just say, God, what movie do you want to do? What story do you want to tell? And so I just get to sit on the sidelines and see God do amazing things.
Isn't it cool?
It's cool, dude.
How the train is on the tracks. God's getting his work done.
Yep.
And then he's like, hey, you want to come along?
Front row seat, man.
And as soon as you say yes,
yep.
Look out, baby, because it's Katie Bar the Door.
Front row seat.
That's so cool. I Can Only Imagine, opening March 16th around the country. ICanOnlyImagine.com is the website. You can go check out the trailer. There's a brand new trailer that just dropped. I've got that out there on Facebook, so you can check it out there. But ICanOnlyImagine.com. March 16th, it's a Friday, that opening weekend, and don't worry, I won't let you forget. I'm going to be lovingly beating
you up
about it.
That's why we love you.
Between now and March 16th. It's great having you here finally in the studio, and thanks for all your work and your obedience to the Lord, Andy.
Thanks, Steve.
You're welcome. Okay, friends, have a great weekend, and we'll keep talking about I Can Only Imagine, and God willing, I'll talk to you guys again real soon.